For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Mini Babybel Light. Perfect for when you want to satisfy your cravings without compromising on taste. High in protein and 47% less fat than Mini Babybel Original, Mini Babybel Light is the ultimate snack to add to your new routine in 2023. Start your new year the right way with Mini Babybel Light.
Let's say you have an encounter, like a sexual encounter, and it's great, but you're like, here's a little thing like I'd like to improve on like next time. Like I should have said it in the moment, but I didn't. I have had a bad habit of like right after being like, hey, so like that was great, but this, we could do this differently next time. And I feel like that comes off really overwhelming. Is there a better way to deliver that information?
That is a great question.
Thank you.
Now we're recording.
I just have one snap.
Yeah, everything's going. So
yeah, so Sid just has to finish her food. God damn, we literally, guys, this intro is supposed to be like 20 minutes 30 minutes, and it's already 5:50.
No, this episode's gonna be too good.
Well, we hope so.
You know, we can have a conversation while Sid has dinner time over there.
We're like, all right, let's record. Then all of a sudden, Sid opens her dinner, starts eating. Every time. I love it, though.
I looked over, and it looks so good.
It does look good. I smell it. Mm. She's still chewing as we're, hey, guys. Tell us about what you're eating.
Sorry, I had to do a big breath after that. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm dandy. How are you doing?
I'm glad
dandy. You look good today.
Thanks.
Oh, looking
you
at you, I'm
you
like,
do
damn.
Too. Sid literally did her makeup in our live right before the podcast, and you look bomb.
Oh my God, really? Thanks. Yeah, it's not too intense?
No.
Because the filter was kind of throwing me off. Yeah. I couldn't tell if I rubbed it in all the way.
It looks great.
Okay, good.
Ooh. It looks great.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Sorry, I have the hiccups. I've gotten them like 10 times today, and I'm just like, I feel like I'm borderline hiccup every time I talk and take a breath, and it's super uncomfortable. I don't know if you get that. I get it when either I eat something spicy or my esophagus gets all weird when I drink like something cold, like a smoothie or something. And my all of a sudden I got the hiccups probably 6 times today already.
When I have something cold, actually, I feel like I get the hiccups too.
Yeah,
I get the hiccups
the shit out of me
a lot, and I don't even know why.
Yeah.
Hey Ben.
What? This
is just so funny. He has his flashlight on his phone. It's like he's a grandpa.
Oh, do I really?
Grandpa move. It's always so embarrassing when that happens.
I know. Wait, when someone tells you, yeah, hey, by the way, your flashlight's on. It's like, oh,
it's like, fuck,
awkward.
Why is that such an embarrassing thing?
Can I tell you something funny?
Yeah.
Before I was dating Jordan, this guy came up to me in the gym, and he was kind of checking me out a little bit, and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And he walked up to me, and I like took my AirPod out, and I kind of like finished my squat.
So excited for him to hit
so
on you.
So excited. And I was like, and I go, huh? And he goes, your flashlight's on. And I was like, thank you. Mm. And then he just turned and walked. Like he specifically came up to me just to tell
that.
Me that. Left, walked away, gone with the wind. And I was like, I will never come here at this time.
Okay. Have you ever?
Yeah.
That is so awkward and funny.
What?
Have you ever like secretly tried to record something, but the flash was on? I think that was more when it was Snapchat, when Snapchat was a thing and you thought it was facing you. So like the flash would be on. You're like, fuck.
Or you're like trying to like take a, yeah, discreetly of somebody yeah. somewhere public. Cause yeah. you're like, oh my gosh, look at this. Like, I don't know. It was like somebody's friend of a friend. And I tried to take a photo and the flash went off and I was like, oh, silly phone.
Oh, you like quick slam it down.
Also, you just gleeked like across the room. It was like a little shining
no
light.
Way.
Yeah, you did. It was almost like a shooting star. Let's make a wish.
Wish, 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 wish. I've always wanted to purposely know how to gleek.
I used to be able to. Also random. This is random, but
we both did.
We go. Have you ever sent a message about someone to someone?
Yes.
To the person?
Absolutely.
Oh my God. I just read something on that. I think it was on Twitter, but I just was cracking up because it's so relatable.
Yeah.
Everybody right now is thinking in their head of like, oh damn. Remember that one time I was calling out Sally for being a little biatch and I sent it to Sally. You know what I mean?
Luckily mine.
Oh.
Luckily, mine was to my mom. Oh. So I think I've shared.
Oh, wait, you I have feel shared like, this. Well, I'm like, having deja vu.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've already talked about this on the podcast.
I know, but I just love awkward. Talking about it. I love just like reminiscing on the old times, the good times.
Oh, the good times.
The good old days. You guys, we have Lindsay Fraser coming today. I don't know why I said her name like that. Lindsay Fraser coming on today. If you want me to do my news voice. But she is a sex expert in the Minneapolis area, but everywhere. Did your computer just die?
I wanted to share her intro, but it wasn't working.
Oh, it's okay. Go ahead.
Why I do have a little intro for her.
Okay. I would love to hear it.
So Lindsay Fraser, y'all, as my computer is loading. Oh my God.
You're having some technical difficulties over there.
You need a charger?
Here we go. No. Oh, look how cute she is, her photos.
Isn't it? Okay. Lindsay Fraser is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a certified sex therapist through the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. She holds a master's degree from St. Mary's University and has been maintaining a small private practice in South Minneapolis.
Since 2011, that's a pretty good amount of time.
How did we find her?
I was Googling sex therapists because I wanted to find one so bad, and I found one that I don't remember. Somebody had said their name, and I like put two and two. I'm like, oh my God, this is the person someone had recommended. Because usually if I see a name, I can remember it forever. It's kind of a weird thing. I don't know why. So I was like, I recognize the name. And then I emailed her. I'm like, hi, Lindsay. Would you ever want to do this because I have sex issues? Yeah. I mean the podcast. Just kidding. Awkward. No.
So the goal here, I think we're going to talk about a few things, but like taking pressure off of sex and how to enjoy it. Also, she has done a few like presentations about sex after having kids, which I'm like curious about because I have never thought about that, and now I'm scared.
I know.
So I'm curious to see what she has to say.
Because it doesn't look the same down there after you do all that, FYI, you know?
I heard it rips, but we'll get into that with her. And then, I guess we'll see kind of where the conversation takes us. But first, shall we do a little straight candy moments?
Yeah.
Who wants to go?
Okay, I'll just say it because I just really don't want to like reminisce on it. I feel like I've been talking about buttholes and toots and poops and all the things really a lot lately. Jordan was on a call and I came home from altar working out and I had a coffee and I went upstairs and I go about my business. I'm usually the routine pooper in the morning. Okay?
Oh, so we're going back to toots and poops.
We are. Because love it. You know what though? Because this is just what happens in my world. So here we are. And you know, whatever. And then I like showered, got all cute, whatever. Went downstairs, sat in my office, and I'm back in the kitchen. I've got to get some water. And I'm like, hey, babe. And he's coming down the stairs, and he literally stops halfway down the stairs and goes, gagged, gagged. No, like a real gag, not like a fake one. Oh. And he goes, he's like, you know, trying to swallow and breathe. He's like, whatever you did in the bathroom, don't ever do that again. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he goes, there's no one to blame it on. There's no one to blame it on. Just stop what you're doing and don't do that again. And he went right back upstairs and went away.
Don't poop again?
He wants me to hold it in forever. That's a toxic relationship. No, but anyway, it's just life,
you're just
man.
Like, oh.
These are the normal things of when you move in with each other. And it sucks, honestly. Imagine trying to be like sexy and cute and feeling all done up for the day and then being like, oops, I just did a gnarly thing.
This is so funny because this is what happened to me this morning and I have to share it because now it can be my straight candy moment.
Wait, what?
So with my anxiety that's happening, obviously I have constipation going on. So I have IBS-C. If y'all been diagnosed with that, hey, hello, same here. So I've been having issues going to the bathroom. Wow, gosh, we're really starting to poop again, but
I'm sorry that we always talk about this, you guys, but it's like just what happened.
But
I don't know. It's notable.
Like, let's say it together now. Girls poop. Okay, here we are. But so I'm actually really happy, which is why I'm in a good mood today. Because if you poop, you're set for the day.
You're clear.
Your brain fog goes away. You're like, I am fucking superwoman because I had a good duker this morning.
I love that you called it that.
Yeah. So I was really excited because I pooped, right?
Yeah.
Nice one. And I walk out and I go, because he always looks at me like this and I make eye contact with him and I just smile and I go, it was a good one. And we give each other high fives.
You high five?
And then we both hold hands and we jumped and go, I had a good poop. And
we were jumping
up and down.
I kid you not. You guys are like Sims characters. Like, I feel like you guys are literally like Sims characters in your house.
We were
celebrating.
I feel like
you walk up to the refrigerator and they go, me no, open it. And you're like, wah, wah, wah. And then you turn around and you're like, yay.
Actually, a really good representation.
I feel like you guys just go from this to this to this to this, and it's
We honestly have a. I honestly think it'd be funny to have a reality show. Just people.
I would love
the way we interact is hilarious.
I would love to watch you guys for a day. Is that weird? I just want to watch what you're up to in the window.
You can come hang out.
I'll just be under the bed or like in the corner with a blanket over my head. You won't even notice me. Can you imagine though? I'm just in the corner. God, I had something to say.
Celebrate your poops, y'all.
I do have a positive straight cannon moment.
Okay.
Right now in my job, I'm like supporting the CMO with some stuff. And like my ultimate goal, if I were to stay within like a corporate role, would be to be a CMO one day. Yeah. But I stepped up. I said what I wanted to help on. I like basically offered a helping hand. I asked if this woman would be my mentor. I did all the things and the steps. And she was like, you know what? What better way to like see if you're right for this role and you're like perfect in branding if for you to not like step in or for you to step in when I'm out of office.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Oh, she's out of office.
Yeah. And I'm sure this is 1/900th of like all the things she's doing.
Yeah.
But like I'm owning it and we're fucking killing it if I don't say so for myself. So I'm very excited and happy. Oh, sorry. And I'm in the conversations I want to be in. And it's cool when work is cool, because I want to say for a second that like work is not fun. It's not going to be the most exciting thing ever, but it pays the bills. It needs to, right? And sometimes it's not the best thing ever. And if it's, you know, you have to decide if it's worth it or do you need to leave and go for your passions, right? But sometimes you can weasel your passions into your 9-to-5 into corporate. So.
Absolutely. And then you get that little taste of like that drive and that motivation and kind of remembrance of why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah, and
you're
it feels
like,
good.
I like this feeling. Like I want to go harder now. Like let's fucking go. So I love that.
Thank
good
you.
For you, babe.
One reminder though, if you've got a gut feeling that you're probably not in the position that you want to be in, but you're afraid of leaving the company too early, or if it's going to look bad in your resume, or like this area of work is known to make money, stop what you're doing. Think again. Money always follows passion. Always. So I would literally X-nay whatever you're doing and don't worry about your damn resume. Just get out and do something that you're passionate about.
I love it.
Amen.
Love it.
And thank you for coming to this TED Talk.
Thank you. Thank you. Maybe Ben, do you have a straight kind of moment for us?
Benifer.
Like 2 days later.
Yes.
You
I was.
Do.
Well, I remember I told you guys. So I went out with a bunch of my friends. Oh. I'm very comfortable with my sexuality. I hang out with like a lot of gay friends. I have this one that always like will like hit on me. He's like, if you were gay, I'd go straight after that.
Oh, I love to hear that. So, God, doesn't that make you a little cocky?
A little.
I'd be like, oh, someone's hitting on me.
Well, just you wait. So we're at a bar. We're drinking. We're getting kind of drunk. And I don't remember how it came up, but he basically was like, I bet you're a bad kisser. And I was just like, you here now. And we just started making out. And the best.
I love this.
That's
no
so
shame.
So badass. Oh,
I mean, I'm very comfortable. I'm very into women, but I was like, "Yo, bro, you can't challenge me like that and not expect me to step up." Like,
what was the consensus?
The best part is I didn't remember what the consensus was until we played in a kickball league, and I was like, "Hey, yo, like, you know, so James. That's not his name, but like James, like, you know, like I totally don't remember if you like gave me the thumbs up." He's like, it was a good makeup. You're a good kisser.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, victory! Like,
yes. Ben's so hyped up about it. I love it.
Oh, 100%.
No, dude, that's honestly kind of cool that you're like, you're just so sexually comfortable and it doesn't have to be such like this big deal. You know what I mean? That even growing up, I feel like it would have been.
I was just going to say, like, the fact that you can do that, I think makes you even more like the guys that are like, oh, my God, I would never do that. That dude's gay is probably the ones that maybe are like curious about their sexuality, which is okay, but don't be so defensive about it. Like, I love that you can do that, no shame, and like we still know you're into girls. Like, it's okay.
We know
what I mean.
Like,
I mean, I know I'm into girls. That's all I need to know.
Oh, I love it.
Also, that was a weird thing that I was talking about with someone recently. I forget who it was right before this. I think it was the other day. Of like, why do we have to be like, oh, well, by the way, that person is lesbian, or oh, that person is gay, oh, that person is bisexual. I don't go like, oh, this is Sophie, by the way. She's straight.
Or
you know,
this is my lesbian friend. It's like, no, that's not their identity. Like
why do we always add that label? Yeah. Like, it's none of our business. It's their sexual business.
I'm telling you, by 2090, everyone's just going to be fluid. Like, you'll be dating all types, female, male, everyone will be fluid. And I don't know. I guarantee. I just hope. I think that'd be so fun.
I think that would be very fun.
Like, you just never know. Like, if it's a girl, you're like, maybe we could date, maybe we couldn't. I made out with a friend one time just to see if I was a good kisser. I shared that once too. Claire Sherman, me and her went at it at Punch Bowl Social in the photo booth. And we both were great.
We both were great. So she goes, so there. So there you have it. Okay. Random reminder, if you're not volunteering right now, I don't know where I'm going with this. This just popped in my head. From kissing your friends to volunteering, if you're not volunteering right now, get on some shit. That's a reminder from me to you. Get on some volunteering shit, because I've been volunteering lately, and damn does it feel good to get back. Go look for something in your area, okay? I'm just trying to be like a good reminder
of
stuff.
How do you find something in your area? Like, give us more details. Like, okay. Where do you volunteer?
I volunteer at People Serving People in downtown Minneapolis. Did you hear that? Just kidding. People Serving People.
Okay.
I just have this like.
There was a podcast review. Sid talks too fucking fast.
Was that a review?
Yeah.
I will try to slow down.
Slow.
Yeah.
I only talk slow because I'm really thinking really hard because I am the dumb blonde per se on the podcast.
You know what? I talk fast because I have anxiety. All right. Biatch, yeah. So watch yourself.
And I talk slow because I have anxiety, because I have brain fog.
Okay, let me finish. Wait, what were you going to say?
Put the podcast on 0.75 speed.
Yeah, slow it down. Solved. There you go.
It's not us, it's you. Sorry.
Me? I'm like, no, you got to fix your ears. Yeah, you got to fix your ears. No, look it up online. All I got to say is I like to do things that immediately impact the community. So nothing wrong with like a Feed My Starving Children or something like that. But I just like to think that if it's something immediate to my community where I can give back to people who are needing it right there, I would do that. That's my advice. Okay. Anywho, we are about to get ready to party, honey. Lindsay Fraser is in the freaking house. Without further ado, shall we?
Let's bring her on.
Oh, my. What? God, you keep making me glass over my throat tickles.
I don't know. I was just being weird.
I'm a rock star.
Okay, bye.
Bye. See you in a second.
All right, Lindsay.
She's here.
Welcome in.
How are you?
Good.
Great. How do you say your last name, by the way?
Fraser.
Okay,
Fraser.
Good.
Okay. Yep.
I feel like
Lindsay
I have been saying it right.
Fraser, our sex therapist, our first ever sex therapist on the podcast. We've been trying to get a sex therapist on for a month now, honestly, since we started the podcast. So we appreciate you coming on.
And you're local too, which is like a big deal.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about is it a clinic? Like where exactly is it? And are you taking clients right now?
I have a small private practice in South Minneapolis where I specialize in relationships and sexuality. I do currently have a wait list, but I do also do workshops and presentations and things like that as well. Okay. Too.
You did one in, where was it recently? Semi-recently.
I was in Sweden.
No way.
With my Enneagram and sexuality group, where we did some presentations on Enneagram and sexuality. So I also have the specialty around, I use sexuality and relationships in conjunction sort of with the Enneagram and your type as well.
If someone's listening who doesn't know the Enneagram, can you explain what that is and how do you use that in relation to the sexuality? That's so interesting.
So what the Enneagram is it's most people kind of think of it as like a personality typing tool, but actually it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more about sort of our unconscious motivations, and there's 9 different ways that all of us sort of approach the world. So for instance, I'm a 9, a social 9, which means that I am the peacekeeper. I want things in my life to be calm and peaceful. And my biggest worry and concern is that things will be chaotic or I'll have disconnection around me. But there are 8 other types of people in the world as well and how they approach it. And so the idea is to become aware of sort of these tendencies and these patterns and how that influences or affects us as individuals.
So interesting. I'm the enthusiast. I'm a 7.
Oh, you're a 7.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
It's a little psychotic, but.
I think I was in between 2 of them. I can't remember the other one, but one of them was 7. I think maybe it was like 3 and 7. I don't remember.
That's what I think I was. Yeah, it was in between the two. Like I could have gone either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm definitely more of a 7, I would say.
Yeah. And you'll be one type. So the idea is that you're sort of either born with it or it develops sort of like in the first 5 years of your life as far as what this type is.
I know we're probably going to bug you about the mic. That's okay. No. We bug everybody about the mic. They know.
Listeners are so used to us. Like if you watch YouTube, we like look like we're like, put the microphone up.
I know.
It does feel kind of like, I'm like, what?
Right.
I know. You can tilt it a little bit.
You don't have to hold it up there as long as it's almost touching your lips.
Touching my
lips. I've knocked my teeth so many times.
Okay, yes, I got it. Yes. Yeah. I got it.
Okay, continue.
Because we're both 7s, could you just give us like a little taste of maybe what you would talk about for 7s?
Well, 7s tend to be, in general, it's like they're always looking to the next thing that's going to create pleasure for them. So it's oftentimes they are thinking a lot. They're kind of going from thing to thing to thing. It's sort of like, oh, I really like this thing. I'm really interested in it. And then you're there for a little bit. And then some shiny thing over here is really interesting. Yeah. And then you're there for a little bit. And so they have wonderful ideas, but they have a hard time sometimes implementing the wonderful ideas that they have.
Yeah.
Well, that is me in a nutshell.
It says here online that the seven is distractible and scattered.
If that isn't our podcast.
It literally says busy, fun-loving, spontaneous, versatile, distractible, and scattered. Yeah. Well, that sounds like us, if that doesn't literally put us in a nutshell.
Oh, and maybe I was the challenger. I don't know anymore. But anyways, okay, how do you wrap that into sex life and sexuality?
Well, different types are going to approach sex in different ways. And I think I also bring in there's like an instinctual stacking or an instinctual bias that you sort of have within conjunction with the Enneagram. And so it's self-preservation, social, and sexual. And so those will also come into play as far as how you are sexually, as well as how you engage with people in your life. So one of the things that so self-preservation is like, are my basic needs being met? Do I have enough food? Do I have enough money? They're going to kind of hyper-focus on that. And around sexuality, and again, this is newer research, keep in mind, like my group, there's some people doing the research, say I'm Frederick and Valerie, and even in my practice, but what we're seeing is that people that have self-preservation first tend to like focus more on the physical pleasure of sex. So did I get an orgasm or not? They don't care as much about sort of foreplay or engaging in sort of those parts of sex. And the social instinct is more about like, do I belong in the groups of people that are important to me? Some people can get confused with status or that, you know, socials are very, you know, social or extroverted. Not so much. They're just more concerned with like, what is my placement in the group that I have? And is my placement like, do I have an important place and do I belong? And I'm going to be very in tuned with what's happening in the group of people that I belong to. But I could still, like, I'm a social nine. And I'm extremely introverted and I like being at home by myself, but with the groups that I'm a part of, it's like really important that I have an important role and that I'm connected and that I belong and those sorts of things as well. And then around sexuality, what we're noticing is that in that piece, it's more about bonding and connection. So it's more about like, you know, I look at sex as the way to be closer and more connected and bonded to you. And so that's a completely different way. If you think about what I just described with the self-preservers are like, did I get my orgasm today? Yep. Check. Mm-hmm. I don't care how I get it. Did I get it?
Yeah. Yep.
And then the third instinct is your sexual.
Is that you?
The self-preservation one?
Yeah. Oops.
And then the third one is your sexual instinct. And this is the one where you sort of go towards like what we call the life force or the juice. And so it's like, you know, do I feel like this instant spark or connection and sort of like, ooh, like I'm attracted to this thing. I want to move towards this thing. And it's really about sort of like desirability around like, am I desirable? Do people find me attractive? You know, and around sexuality for them. So it's like really important to be desirable. And also they can get, they want to have the partner's attention like fully on them. Like, are you engrossed in me? Do you see me? They can have a little bit more or tend to have a little bit more jealousy, not always, especially if other people are sort of getting your attention. But around sex, like they're the people that it doesn't matter where you are and what's happening. Like we are into each other. We're going to have sex right here on the beach. I don't care if there's sand in my underwear, all of those sorts of things.
I don't want sand in my underwear. I don't.
I don't either.
But I do like spontaneity, but no sand in the underwear.
No.
Yeah. Well, in sevens in general, I feel like spontaneity around sexuality, whether it's instinct or not. So the instinct is sort of the thing that sets that's kind of how we are. Then the type comes in and kind of sets the nuance.
Wow.
But it's a lot of this is newer stuff. It's newer research. So it's just a lot of observations of what we're observing. And then my three colleagues, Valerie, Frederick, and Sam, have been doing this research with like small focus groups. And they're finding some really interesting things as well.
People like horoscopes, people like Enneagrams. Imagine if the Enneagram is proven, which is what you're doing and working on and like building.
We're trying
like,
to, yeah.
That it's connected to sexuality. Oh my God, people freak. People love to read their charts. Like people love that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
This is, and I like
this means so much more.
And I think the Enneagram is, I'm probably saying it wrong. And how do you say
Enneagram.
It? Enneagram.
Yep.
This is definitely like, you do identify with one of these. Like that's like, it's you are taking the test and figuring out what you identify with when horoscopes is kind of more
well,
like.
Well, no, I was just, yeah. I'm just saying theoretically, people like to hear about themselves. That's the only connection I was making.
Absolutely.
Is people like to hear about what they're about. You know what I mean?
That, yeah.
overarchingly is connected.
Interesting. I love learning.
Question for you. What is the most common reason you see people for in your practice?
It tends to be desire discrepancy. So one person has higher desire and one person has lower desire. And what's interesting in my particular office, like we sort of assume that this is mostly women that are going to have the lower desire. It's actually 50-50.
What? Mm-hmm.
In my particular practice, like now statistically in society, it might look different. Yeah. But I think, you know, I think what's really important to kind of point on here is like what happens is like men are not going to talk about when they have lower sexual desire. It's going to look like something else. You know, so I'm too busy. There's other things going on. They're not really going to admit if it's happening or occurring for them because men's sexuality is so wrapped up in like who your masculinity is wrapped up in your sexuality. And so men are not talking about this. I'm not sure if this is stats overall, but it was really interesting. So I've been in practice 11 years and it is 50-50. It is half of the men have the lower desire and half the women have the lower desire.
That seems surprising to me, but I can understand that now that you talk about the reason why.
I weirdly just got goosebumps. That is crazy to me because it is the toxic masculinity and people not wanting to get help and just covering it up with other excuses or other things happening in their life. That is amazing.
In these relationships, like what is the issue? Like usually, like what is the main thing or that you're working on with them if their desire is low?
You know, it can be complicated. It can be a multitude of things. So, I mean, sometimes it depends, like, you know, focusing on. So usually people are one of two ways around connection. Like either you need emotional connection first before you want to be physical, or through physical connection itself, you receive emotional connection. More often than not, men are going to get the emotional connection through the physical. And then women are going to get they need emotional connection first before they need physical, but I see both in my office. So this isn't a blanket statement. It's just, you're going to see more of that sort of play out. What I do notice is that if you are emotionally connective person first and you're having conflict or issues or concerns within your relationship, you're going to be a little bit maybe lower desire, but it's actually not, it's like, I don't feel close to you, so I don't want to have sex with you. And then there's multitude of contexts as well. So Emily Nagowski sort of walks through a lot of those different contexts. If you're familiar with her Come As You Are book, that sort of affects sexuality as well. So there's your environment. There's just so many things.
I was going to ask you about that book because that's one of the books I've been wanting to read. Would you recommend that book as a sex therapist?
Yes, I highly, highly recommend that book. And in some ways, I wish it wasn't geared just towards women because so many of those things in that book apply to men as well. So I use her, she's got two surveys in there around, you know, figuring out your, it's like the first one is sort of like, you know, what's the brakes and the accelerators that are sort of affecting sexuality. And then like, where are you as far as like desire? Like, are you high or are you kind of like medium or lower desire sort of in there as well? And her little questionnaires are great. I use them all the time in my practice. The hard one for men when they're doing it is they have the hormone one related in there. And so I always just say for men, I'm like, well, you know, men have hormones too that affect their sexuality. You just don't understand it in the same way that a woman would, but you know, just, you know,
exactly.
Just ignore that one. But it's really too bad that it's geared towards women because a lot of that information actually applies to men as well. Otherwise, there's good books for men too around sexuality.
So I think Sid and I were going to bring up some of our sexual insecurities in our relationships and kind of get your take on it. And I'm going to ask mine first just because it's relating to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So when I first started my relationship with my boyfriend, like sexual desire was pretty equal. I was very horny all the time. Like we had sex often, and as we lived together and like, obviously maybe we're not going to have sex as much, but recently I've been dealing with like more mental health stuff, being stressed out, burnout, anxiety has been happening. So my sex drive is lower than what it used to be. It's uncomfortable to kind of navigate that with him because like I'm very communicative. He knows exactly how I'm feeling. Like I do communicate with him. Like my body's just not like what I got to figure out what's going on inside. Like maybe my hormones are a little unbalanced. And like sometimes I do want to have sex and it happens still, but it's just not as often. And his desire is for sure higher than mine. And mine's due to like that stress. So I guess I'm asking you as a sex therapist, like, what do I do? Because I feel like I want to be able to have sex more and want sex more, but I don't.
I mean, I think it's looking at the things that will create more sexual desire for you. So like when I was talking about that book that Emily Nagowski has, she actually kind of walks you through part of this too. So it's the sense of, you know, like figuring out the context in your life that either turn off sexual energy or are going to turn on sexual energy. And so probably what's happening right now is you have a lot of contexts in your life that are probably turning it off more. I think one important thing to note too, how long have you been together?
About a year.
Okay. So there's something that also happens about a year to a year and a half into a relationship as well around sexuality. So when you first meet, you have all those oxytocin chemicals and the dopamine, like all of these chemicals are sort of creating this. And with the Enneagram, we talk about like it's the sexual instinct energy, right? Is like in us all, even if it's not our top one, it's going to be there more. So you're going to feel more of that. And then about a year to year and a half, those chemicals go back to their normal level. And so you're not going to have the same level of desire as you did in the beginning of the relationship a year to year and a half in. And a lot of times what we talk about, there's like a relationship cycle that we go through. So like in the beginning, you have what we call like the infatuation period, which lasts probably about a year, year and a half. And then you have sort of the like, I can't even think of the right word.
That's all right.
There's like a lull.
Disillusionment. Sorry,
there
I
it
got
is.
It.
Ooh, you grabbed it though.
I grabbed the word. It's disillusionment. And you go into disillusionment and the rosy colored glasses come up. You're like, oh, who are you? And why am I with you? And sort of that experience happens.
God, that sounds like me. I'm like, wait, what the hell am I doing?
They've been dating longer.
Yeah. And then you have what's called repairs, like you work through and you repair those parts of the relationship. And then you have what's called romantic connective love, or that's the term that I use for it. And the reality is that you never go back to infatuation. And so you kind of will go from erectic connective love back into disillusionment and repair. And you're going to keep doing this cycle. But that infatuation period does exist in the first year, year and a half. And then it kind of goes away when those chemicals sort of go back to their normal levels. Like, isn't that, I think it's so fascinating that humans have these, like, we produce more of these chemicals when we're like in new relationships to sort of like gear towards that, you know, desirability and basically, well, reproduction really is
what
our little bodies want to do, right?
Yeah. I also love that you brought up the cycle of the relationship, because I think a lot of times when things get hard, when there's that repair that's happening, people dip out. And I think that is so important to note, that like try to push back past that if you're having a little difficulties in your relationships. Like even Sid just mentioned last episode, like, yeah, like how you and Jordan had that lull and you guys are now like in a repair state and you're like back to it, like
You can't just give up. No, like why do you give up on people? Like, you know what I mean? Like you see one little issue and that becomes the issue that breaks you up, when in reality you've spent so much time and effort going into this relationship and it's not a deal breaker. You know what I mean? It's just something that needs to be looked into and might just be annoying you because you're in an annoyed mood for a few months. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how I think about it. But that is the cycle makes sense when I'm thinking about my own relationship. Like I'm like, oh, I remember being that, and I remember being that, and I know where I am right now. So that's cool. That's cool to hear though.
So like in terms of my desire, you think I should like focus on some of the external things that are turning off that sexual desire switch for me? And like,
yeah, it's some of it's that, but also it's like, what is the good enough sex, right? Like how often, I mean, ideally, like how often would you want to have sex? I think that there's this idea in society that I hear a lot of times in my office, like, oh, it should be 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. Who says?
Yeah.
And in reality, it's like the averages are 52 to 62 times a year in healthy sexual relationships. So you're looking at maybe once or twice a year, but keep
once
in mind.
Once or twice a week?
Once or twice, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
A year?
I'm like, damn, it dried up down there.
I said that wrong.
So who cares? Once or twice a week. See, like, it's so fucked up that I'm like, okay, so that's normal?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. Well, but
what I was gonna
there's no normal.
Well, there's no normal, but also what I was going to say on that is like when they're taking those stats, it's like I might have a really stressful month or two. Maybe we have sex once, and then we're like on, you know, a beach island, hanging out, lounging. We're having sex 3 times a day. I mean, or you know, once a day. So I think also when I say that, like people come in, they're like, "Well, I'm not having sex once a week or twice a week." I said, "It's about, you know, what's normal for you too," and couples talking about that. But this 3 times a week that I don't know where it comes from in society. People like have, like, we should be having sex 3 times a week.
I mean,
like, who
I even thought that. I was like, oh my gosh, we're not doing it enough. We need to work on it. It's like, we need to work on it. And then you're in this like a mindset of like, we've got to do it. So then you don't want to do it. And you're also like anxious, and I don't feel sexy or turned on, because I'm like,
there's
I have
pressure
to do this, because there's pressure on the situation, which doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Okay. So you can do that.
Yeah, I can do that for sure.
You can freaking work on that.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, want to hear my problems now?
Sid's turn.
Like, it's my turn.
All right. Batter up. Here we go. Sid, walk up to the plate. Okay. Hi, everyone. So I have this issue with, like, I was never in relationships where I was the one being, like, how do I say this? Like, I want to say treated, but that's not the right word. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a mutual, like, sexual encounter. It was like for that person. Like, when they finished, we were done. You know what I mean? And that was the pattern I've always been in. And so I have this problem coming out of, like, this performer, like, mindset when I'm having sex. So, like, I feel like I'm performing for the person versus enjoying. And then I wonder why I'm in, like, a different mindset, or, like, my mind is, like, going all over the place and I can't sometimes orgasm, or, you know what I mean, or different things like that. Like, I feel like I continue to go back to my old ways of performing and I don't know how to relax. And I think I just want to note that I've had a few encounters, like, you know, like, sexual assault situations that have happened that have probably not helped my case. You know what I mean? Like, different things that have happened when I was younger, and then, like, feeling like I don't know, like, no one can actually help me because that happened to me, you know, and I'm like, I can't figure out how to separate those situations. And I finally was able to separate them, like, sexually. Like, I don't need to think about that when I'm having sex. Like, I don't need to think about those things that have happened to me. And now it's like I'm performing because I'm still going into a different headspace versus just being in the moment and enjoying it. Just a really small, small problem that I have. Just tiny. Just kidding. It's probably, it's like massive. She's like, oh, Jesus Christ. We can't fix you.
She's like, here's my one insecurity. And then we're like, all right, here's my whole life.
Literally, my life story. Here we go.
But no, it's a great question and great concern.
My question would be is, like, why performing? Like, where is that message coming from? You know, I mean,
society, what?
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, it's everywhere, I feel like. You know what I mean?
I think that, you know, for women, there's a lot of focus oftentimes goes more on sort of, it's my job to please my partner. I think it's shifting a little bit where men are actually feeling the same pressure, but it's just still not quite the same. Unfortunately, it's like, no, men and women both are just feeling more pressure is what I'm finding. It's not let women are having less. It's men are now starting to have pressure around sex as well, which I find is hard to see. But I think, one is you're not staying present in the moment. And I think I'm like, oh, and you're an Enneagram type 7. You're not staying present in the moment. I'm on to the next thing that I need to be performing or doing sexually. And that's going to also then sort of affect. But this is for anybody. It doesn't matter what your Enneagram type is or any of those sorts of things. It's like during sex, for sex to be as pleasurable, it's like, it's about being fully present in the experience in the moment. And so, like, a lot of times what I will have people do when they struggle with that is body scan meditations. So doing body scan meditations, paying attention to different parts of your body as you're going through that. Like, what does it feel like in my head? What does it feel like in, you know, my eyes, my arms? One of my favorite other exercises is like,
body scanned. Do you do this while you're having sex, or do you?
No, is this outside when you're of
like,
sex.
Okay. I was like, wow, so, I'm going to have to just kind of.
Yeah. You're
just
like,
give me a second.
But that actually would be sexy.
That it would kind of be sexy. Like, yeah. Okay. Well, like, I've done that to him too.
If you're like, Jordan, like, go at it. I'm going to meditate. I'm supposed to pay attention to all the feelings, and like, he could like play with your body.
I mean, oh, I've done that to him though.
But that's you performing.
You think I'm just some, come on.
No, but that's you performing. You got
to
do it.
No, but I wanted to do that one.
I know, but
I need to get it. I know.
You allow it to happen to you.
I don't know if I can. I will. But no, that's it.
Yeah,
okay.
Body scan meditation or like one of the sensual things you can sort of do with yourself too, like when you're in the bathtub is like, I always like putting water down your arm and sort of feeling it and really paying attention to the warmth, the coolness, how it drips down your arm and really just feeling how that feels in your body because that gets you more in your actual physical body, which will actually help you lead to more pleasure during the experience. And actually the thing that you're suggesting about like letting you like laying there, like that actually is also really good because it's kind of more mindful massage where you're sort of like laying there and letting your partner do different things to you. You know, can be PG, it can be R. I mean, it can be X-rated.
Yes.
It can be whatever you want. But I mean, I do find that sort of, you know, the nice thing about like massage in general can go through. So one of the things that I talk about as well is that, you know, Barry McCarthy came out with these five dimensions of touch. And so you have your first level of touch is affectionate touch. You have sensual touch, playful touch, erotic and intercourse touch, and your arousal levels go from like 1 to 10 over the course of these. And it's like with massage, you can be in a, you know, sensual all the way to erotic, depending on what you're doing. And it actually is a really good way to sort of be mindful. As long as you are actually not like wandering off on the beach somewhere else.
Yeah, you're like, wow, what am I going to do tomorrow?
Or asking yourself about your laundry.
Yeah, that's another. I feel like a lot of people struggle with that, of like staying in the mindset of like in the moment versus what they have to do after, or like what happened today, or like feeling the stresses of the day. So
I say environment's huge too. Like I always like your bedroom or the place that you have sex should be like a sanctuary. You know, like, and I'm not always good at this, but I would say like keeping the bedroom clean and cozy and comfortable, and like, only having pictures sort of you as the relationship in that space, because this is your sensual sexual space.
Do you mean, so like, don't have a picture of your boyfriend and his mom hanging in the bedroom?
No.
Do you have that?
Don't have a picture of your boyfriend.
Do you have that?
Do you?
Do you have that?
I'm not confirming or denying anything here.
Well, I'm going to say...
You're like literally in doggy style, looking eye contact with his mom.
People literally go, who is that in this photo? I'm like...
Not me.
Jordan and his mom. Anyway, look over here. Look at my closet. Like,
get that
like,
out.
Give it a tour.
You know what I'm just thinking too? This
all I can think about now is that your mom's in the bedroom with you.
I know!
That
your mother-in-law.
I'm wondering if you would recommend this too, but I'm thinking more of like... Because for some reason, sex actually does help my anxiety. Like, I'm trying to, like, because I slow down my breathing because I am trying to enjoy the moment. And I'm wondering if, would you ever recommend, like, a mirror just because you can actually, like, see and then you're also in the moment because you're watching? Do you know what I mean?
It would depend on the person. Yeah. I think some people would start to look at their body or judge their body or what am I doing or what am I not doing, make it performative. And then some people, I can sort of be more present and in the moment. So I think it would just depend on the person. Okay, yeah. For some people that work well, for some other people it might not.
I noticed you had a lot of mirrors in your room.
I also don't know what you're talking about. I have a question actually, because I feel like this is one that people have written in about. And when they're not feeling body confident, people have a really, really hard time getting sexual with themselves, getting sexual with a partner. What do you say to somebody who's struggling with body image, who wants to be more sexual with their partner, or feels like even more down in pressure because they're not being sexual because they don't feel good?
The exercise that I give the most frequently for this is, which will sound really uncomfortable when I'm saying it, is as you take all your clothes off and you stand in front of the mirror naked. And you pick one part of your body at that moment that you really like. And then you keep doing this, right? And the next time you come back, you pick two parts of your body that you really like. And it's sort of like falling in love with your own body and really looking at it and enjoying it for what it is. And it's not comfortable. It's actually really, really uncomfortable when I have clients do this. They don't like it. But what I find is it's sort of, you know, the more that I do this, the more comfortable and the more confident that I become sort of with the body that I have.
That's kind of a beautiful piece of advice. I saw that. Like Goop.
Yeah,
if you're familiar, the like sexual version one, you know what I'm talking about?
Well, they had that on the Goop one.
Yes, they did.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and I saw it on there and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so interesting. All I was thinking about when I was watching that is like, holy shit, this woman is not only standing alone in the mirror about her body confidence
with the
camera. Yeah. The cameraman and the audio guy and all these people, and you're just standing in the room naked. You know what I mean? I just can't imagine. Okay, anyway.
I also, like, whenever, because no matter your size, and, like, Sid and I have been open about this too, like, we've dealt with body image issues. Like, some days, even some days, you're like, I don't feel confident. And I think at the end of the day, you also have to remember the person you're with, like, whether this even be a one-night stand, all I'm saying is they're not really looking that intently on if you have a role, this feels great, I'm having fun, they're not looking at your body. So I think you also have to remember that even if it's a one-night stand and if you're in a relationship, like the last thing you should be worrying about is if your loving boyfriend is okay with your body, because he loves you. So
absolutely, I love that, by the way. I love that little wrap up. I just had a question because we were talking about desires and I feel like this might come into that. Like, what is something that people should feel more normal about feeling that maybe they come to talk to you about? Like, whether it be like, you know, I'm not having sex enough, or like I'm not doing some X, Y, or Z, faking orgasms. Like, what is it that people should feel more like a human being and not so anxious about that they're doing or feeling?
Well, I think all of those things, and I also think that what you enjoy or like sexually, you know, what I'll say is everything is normal as long as it's not violating others or animals or, you know, something of the sort, right? And so I think I find people coming in and have, you know, fantasies about things that they think are weird or uncomfortable, and I'll say as long as it's not violating others, it's not a problem. Like, own it. I say, and I always tell the people, don't yuck someone else's yum. A lot of therapists, actually sex therapists that I work with, will say the same phrase because it's such a good one to say. So, you know, I'm not the only one that says this, but it's just that what you like may not be what somebody else likes, and it doesn't matter. And that whatever you like is fine. And you know what? Vanilla sex is just fine too. I think that there's this idea that all of us should be swinging from the chandeliers or engaging in bondage or something of the sort. And honestly, it doesn't matter. It's all about the pleasure and the experience in the moment. And if you're trying some sort of like fetish or kink and you don't like it, like you're not going to be fully present in the moment and enjoy it. And so like, I think that there's both ends. Like you get, people feel shame if they're too vanilla and they feel shame if they're too kinky. And it's like, own it. I don't care what it is. Just freaking own it. And it's okay. Oh, I just said freaking.
Oh, yes. I love it.
Say oh my God.
Yeah. I love it.
I literally wrote, how do I become more sexually comfortable? I consider myself likely vanilla and thought of sex as more anxious than it is exciting sometimes. This is like something written in.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, who cares if it's vanilla?
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Actually, it's all about pleasure and sensation. And somebody that, if vanilla is what works for you and you can be fully in the moment and engage in it, that's what's going to work for you. Kinky sex won't work for you because you're going to be so anxious, be like, I don't like what I'm doing right now. I don't want to be doing this right now. And I'm doing it anyway because I feel like I should. Like, that's not pleasurable.
Performance mindset too. It's performance mindset.
So the other day, this is making me laugh and think I'm going to throw this in here. I was laying on the floor in my living room and my boyfriend was standing above me and I was just kind of like being funny with my feet. And I 100% wanted to try to give a foot job. And I was like, please just let me try. Like, I think it'd be fun. And he was like, you know, I think I'll try that. I'll try it, but not right now. But I was like,
poor Pat's like, I think so.
I was like, I want to get an ab workout. I think it'd be funny. Like,
I love how you're like, I'd like to work a little bit. I'm going to do that. I love that that's your thought. Like, my abs are going to look really good after this.
I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Oh, okay, my God, I love that.
My next question for you is just because we've talked about this probably 4 times now on the podcast, but me and Sid obviously have faked orgasms in the past. A lot of listeners have. How do you recommend females reaching orgasm during sex? Because it's hard. Like, if you're not with a partner that you're comfortable with, I think I still have a hard time reaching orgasm unless I have a vibrator while I'm having sex. So without a vibrator, is it possible? Like, how can more females reach a real orgasm during sex?
It depends on the person, right? Some people are not going to reach orgasm through sex. Actually, 80% of women are not going to reach orgasm through penetrative sex. It needs to be clitoral stimulation.
More. So that's 80%. So 20% of people possibly, like, actually during intercourse, the actual act of that.
20%. It's pretty low, actually. The people that are going to get it actually through penetrative sex. Now, you might get an orgasm if somebody is stimulating your clitoris at the same time, but it's not. Right. It's actually quite rare for women. And I always use the analogy, women are like crock pots. They take some time to warm up.
That's such the Minnesota thing, the crock pot. Yeah, I know. I was going to say oven or the microwave. But
no, oven,
the
crock pot. Like, we're from the Midwest, y'all. Yep.
We're making a roast. Pork roast for the game day, okay?
And the men are the microwave ovens.
Yeah, they're microwaving their cheesy bread.
We're making that roast beef, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean? Okay, something we haven't talked a lot about is like sex after having children. I feel like it is a topic that I'm even fearful of bringing up because I don't know what it looks like. What should we know and what is it like? Because things change down there as far as we know, but that's about all we know.
And we do have some moms that listen.
Yeah,
so
we do.
We're like, let's hit that demographic a bit.
I mean, I think there's multiple things about sex after baby and especially like right after baby. So one of the things that will happen is like if you are breastfeeding, there's prolactin that sort of comes in to your system and it actually affects desire around sexuality. And so when women are breastfeeding, they actually oftentimes will have a little bit lower sexual desire. I mean, there's also many contexts that are happening. My body has just changed. I have a little person. I mean, I've got 2 kids. I've got a 6 and a, well, sorry, he's 7 now. He just turned 7 last Sunday.
Oh my gosh.
I have a 7 and almost 5-year-old. And I think that, you know, and it's kids are constantly, can be hard to have sex period with kids because it's like okay, the kid's watching a show, like, do we have time to run upstairs quick, like, are they getting old enough to know what's going on? I mean, like, all these sorts of things sort of come into play, but like how we feel about our physical body. So there multiple things happen with the physical body, right? Like, yes, things move around, like whether you had a C-section or vaginal birth, things are different. You know
how? So exactly, so if you have a vaginal birth, can you have sex like right away? Is it the recovery faster?
You have to wait. I think it's like 6 to 8 weeks before you can have
that. Yeah, it's like 2 months. I mean,
that's longer than I thought.
It's a long time.
You wear a diaper for a while.
Yeah, you bleed pretty heavily for a long time after having babies.
And ow.
Yeah.
2 months.
You don't bleed the whole 2 months. It just depends on the woman, but you're not supposed to have any sort of sexual intercourse. And the thing is like, so for vaginal births, like everything needs to kind of heal down there and for it to feel better. And for C-section births, it's more about the scar and things like that. Than it, you know, I had 2 vaginal births, so I don't know quite exactly what the experience of is having like a C-section. But I mean, honestly, I'll be honest, like after I had my son, I got stuck in bed. I couldn't get up and out of bed because things were so, and like, it was really hard to walk. It was not as hard with my second kiddo, but like my first one, it's physically exhausting. Like your body really, really, really hurts. And so it was hard to do anything. And then like the last thing you want to do is have sex.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, you don't feel sexy, obviously, but just because you're healing and you've got things that moved and you had birthed a human being.
Yeah. And even though you can get, even though they like, say like you have, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, depending on, you know, it's like a lot of women don't actually are not still not quite ready for sex after the 8 weeks. It might be more like 3 months to 4 months where they're really ready to sort of engage in sexuality. And there's fear because like for some women after sex too, that there can be sexual pain, especially if you had episiotomy or if you had other things going on or things didn't quite go, you know, so it's like, so I think for a lot of women, there's also, So what happens with like, so a lot of people that come to my office, I also get sexual pain, sexual dysfunction for men. So like premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction. And then I get some compulsivity issues. But when the women come in for the sexual pain, the hard thing is like desire gets hijacked because like I have desire, but I'm so afraid it's going to hurt that I don't want to. And this comes into play a lot of times for women right after they have babies because they're not sure whether sex will hurt or not. Or if it'll even feel the same. Because sometimes it doesn't feel the same afterwards either. And the things that worked before you had baby might not work now because things have kind of,
These like are your things clit?
Internal.
Okay. Yeah, not your clit. Your clit stays put.
Okay, that's good.
Thank God.
So all I care about.
Your clitoris doesn't really move, but the inside parts do. And so like sometimes it can feel like you have to kind of maneuver yourself a little bit more. It's not like what will be pleasurable or not pleasurable. Like
these are things I've never
learned. Where you would have maybe known before, like, you know, maybe before you had baby, you sort of knew how to move your body to like have more pleasure and more experience like that. Like it might or might not work depending on the person's body. Okay. And it might take some readjustment and sort of figuring out what's going to work or what's not going to work. And then you've got to, I mean, like infants, you know, infants, your moms are tired, like so tired. Like I'm still tired. but I'm like, I actually get some time to myself. I sleep through the night. Like I would say like anybody that's a mom out there, especially a new mom, like it's really hard. You're doing the best that you can. You're going to be tired. And it's just, it gets better. It gets better when
good.
But yeah, I hope so. I was gonna say you're pushing us away from.
I'm
this.
Like, oh, that's good. That's good. Oh, my legs are squeezing tighter together.
You did quick mention about erectile dysfunction. Yeah. I guess I kind of want to talk about that just because I remember a few DMs about this. Do we have like a direct question?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, wait. Let me see. Okay, uncomfortable but candid, how do I regain control of my erections? It becomes a downward spiral of anxiety and shame when and makes the issues worse when I ejaculate too fast.
Oh, yeah. Ejaculate too fast.
Ejaculate or is it erection?
Oh, I think I'm mixing two together. Sorry, okay. They're two next to each other. Okay. But yeah, it's makes the regain control of my erections. So this one's the first one.
So he's not getting an erection.
Correct.
Okay. Well, there's a multitude that can come into play with that. So if it's something that's happening all the time, I would say go see a medical doctor to make sure that there's not some sort of medical issue or concern going on. If it's not a medical issue or concern, again, this is going to be like the mindfulness meditation type stuff.
It sounds like it's anxiety.
Yeah, it's anxiety related. And so a lot of it is. And one of the things that I highly recommend for men, too, is Barry McCarthy's, I think it's Michael Metz's book, Men's Sexual Health. That is huge for men because it normalizes, like, you are not a machine. It's one of the words that I love that they say in there. Like, you are not always, you don't always need to perform. Sex is not about a performance. It is not about an end. It is about enjoying pleasure and having having the experience. And I think a lot of times what I see when men are having difficulty with erections is it's pressure around, like, am I performing as good as I should? And sometimes what I do with that too is, like, I'll do mindfulness exercises and body scan meditations for them as well to get more in their body and more aware and more present during sex. And then I also have them track sort of the anxious thoughts that are coming up around it. If the anxious thought is like, I'm not going to get erection. Well, how often has it actually happened? Can you, like, kind of challenging those actual thoughts when they happen, in the sense of, okay, that happened once out of the last five times. So that actually when I look back at the evidence is telling me it's not going to happen all the time. It happens sometime. There's also, like, this is huge for men. During erection, your erection ebbs and flows. So you will lose it a little bit during the sexual experience, and then it'll come back. And I think what happens for men is, like, when that ebb happens, like, what's happening? What's happening? And they get anxious and they lose the erection completely because they're not, like, aware of the natural. Nobody talks to us about sex. Nobody talks about the normal, like, what's normal for sex.
I had no idea about that. But
I didn't either.
That is, wow. I've learned so much already.
I know, I'm like, just, I'm absorbing. I'm a sponge. Well, Ben,
this is all cool because I've experienced every single thing that we've done.
Ben's raising his hand.
I've had that anxiety of, like, oh my God, what happened, bro? Like, we're doing this thing, and, like, why are you not? But that's real. I never knew that. Like, that's so crazy. I've always thought that it was supposed to just be the same erection.
A boner
the
whole
time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Most men don't know that. Like, why are we not telling men this?
Wow.
Because then they get nervous or anxious, and then they lose their erection. Like, what's wrong with me? It's like, no, it's a natural part of the process.
And then their desire goes down,
and then,
obviously.
And then their desire goes down, yeah.
Because they're nervous about it.
Because they're nervous.
And thinking about it and anxious.
A new thing that I started getting anxious about is if, like, because, like, our last partner I had, we would do multiple rounds, and, like, as you go through the rounds, it just, like, lasts longer. But, like, I know from talking to you guys, I know that, like, sometimes girls are not down for that, like, hour long session. And so that got in my head was, I was like, it's harder for me to get to that point. And so, like, at some points I'll just get, like, really self-conscious and, like, lose my erection, be like, hey, like, I don't think I'm gonna get there. And that's something that, I don't know, I'm sure other guys can relate to that too, of like, oh, I can't get to that point. And then the anxiety spiral is kind of what I call it. It just down.
Can't get to what point? Like, during the second round, you mean, like,
to ejaculate, I think.
Like, can't ejaculate. Like, I literally just, it kind of spirals to, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm taking so long. Oh no, I'm losing my erection. Gone.
And then I won't lie, when a guy has done that, it hurts your feelings a little. You're like, oh my God, what did I do?
Because you know that too, because it's not them, but it's just like you maybe masturbated that day, so you can't ejaculate.
Or multiple rounds, like you're saying.
Or you did multiple rounds.
Totally.
How does a dude say that without hurting a female's feelings?
Yes, that is actually.
Well, I think it's a both end here, right? Like, women need to understand that when men lose their erections, it may have nothing, and often actually has nothing to do with you. It's something that's going on with them, anxiety, and I think that women kind of equate that to, well, if he loses his erection, he must not be attracted to me, or he must not desire me, or whatever else.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then the guys over here worrying, oh my God, I can't perform. I can't, So I think it's being more, what I always call, like Brene Brown's word, generosity, where it's like, everybody's trying the best that they can at any given moment. And can we have generosity for the experience that's happening? And this is true with sex. So, I think it's, also with sexuality, like, not all of our experiences are going to go the way that we want it. Actually, 20% don't go the way we want around sex. Healthy.
That's
pretty accurate, actually.
Yeah. And I think that, like, I always tell couples when they come in with performative issues, like, just think of this like one of your 20%. Like, if you start thinking about it like one of those 20%, then you don't get so anxious about it, because you just know that it's natural and it's normal, and this is what happens around sex.
Oh my God.
This
because
is
when
so
the,
helpful.
When the anxiety builds and you're like, well, that wasn't great. Yeah. Next time's not going to be great probably. Then you're like, well, now we're not going to have a great sexual encounter because I'm in my head.
We just think 20%.
It's just 20%. That's it. It's just the 20. Who cares?
I also kind of want to give my take on your question, because I've been in that spot as a female a couple times. I prefer honesty. So, like, okay, I'm going to be honest. I masturbated earlier today, so I might not get there. Totally fine. Like, I still enjoy. But I just want to let you know that I enjoy this a lot. Like, it feels good with you. It has nothing to do with you. Like, if you actually say those words, I'd be like, okay, sick. You know what I mean?
We've all been in the situation. They're like, oh, sorry.
Yeah.
And you're like,
Can you at least,
what
like,
the hell did I do? And you're just
at
like,
least
that's okay.
Confirm with her that it's, you know, awkward. It's not her. Like, I don't know. I was kind of stressed today. Like, might not happen, but this is fucking hot. Like, I don't know. That's what I would want to hear as a female.
I think it's interesting, though, because, like, we're all sitting here, and we have all experienced this.
Yeah.
Right? Yep. With a partner.
Absolutely.
Whether it's ourselves or whether it's with partners we've had. And when I was younger and not, like, a sex therapist, like, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, he doesn't desire me. He doesn't find me attractive. Like, he does. And honestly, it was just the beginning of a relationship, and he was nervous.
Yep, I've been in those, too. One question I have, because it keeps popping into my head, is if let's say you have an encounter, like sexual encounter, and it's great, but you're like, here's a little thing like I'd like to improve on like next time. Like I should have said it in the moment, but I didn't. I have had a bad habit of like right after being like, hey, so like that was great, but this, we could do this differently next time. And I feel like that comes off really overwhelming. Is there a better way to deliver that information?
Yes.
Great question.
That is a great question.
Thank you.
So the exercise that I'm giving you like a little free sex therapy tip that I do with clients and actually a lot of therapists do this too. It's the before, during, and after exercise. So you share, you know, now again, not right after a sexual experience. So I say like 30 minutes to an hour after, or even the day after, or it can be days after too, but it's nice to do it kind of close to the actual experience, but not in the afterglow. That'll hurt people's feelings.
We were glowing and that I ruined it.
Yeah, that is always when I think about bringing it up, too. I always think about when you're laying there naked.
Yeah, you're like,
by the way, like.
That awkward, like, kind of after where you're all like, you're still kind of like, you're like breathing and you're just laying there and you're like,
oh, that
hey, that
nice.
Could have, you could have done this. And you're there like, what? And you're like, I don't know, sorry.
Like, just, I kind of like when you do this, though.
So yeah, not right after. You're gonna break the guy's poor heart. You guys do that.
Or yeah. Okay, I have
Wait, but let's let her
sorry.
How do we do it?
So
I'm like la la la.
Like let's seven. Let her answer the
what
question.
What a seven.
Ask the question moves on.
What a seven.
So the exercise that I give is called the before, during, and after. And actually a lot of sex therapists will give this as an exercise because it's a pretty common one in the field. So like after a sexual experience, 30 minutes to an hour, maybe a day later, you just sit down and sort of say, okay, what was one thing that you liked before and one thing that you didn't like before? So, you know what? I really like it when you take me and throw me down on the bed. Or you know what? Actually, I wish you were more gentle, you know, and soft with me. And then you say, share one thing that you liked during and one thing you didn't. So I really like it when you smack my butt. You know what? Please don't bite me.
Okay.
Instance, right? Okay. And then one thing you liked after, like, hey, I like it when we snuggle and cuddle, but actually, you know, I'm really hot. I prefer you give me some space, or, you know, it really hurts my feelings when you get up and go straight to the bathroom. You know, could you just sit with me a little bit before? And so like really what you're doing is just sort of creating dialogue around and sharing one thing you like and one thing that you don't. So you're not just, you know, bringing in a critique. And then sometimes, you know, after time, people might say, okay, let's share two things. Let's share three things. But, you know, I always just start with one. You know, with sexuality, so many of us are not taught how to talk about sexuality. And so, you know, it's like if you can't talk about sex, you probably shouldn't be doing it, is sort of what I tell people.
Oh, I like that.
One great way to just talk about sex, too, if you don't know how to do it, is just go get a sex book together with your partner and read the chapters. But, I, you know, don't pick the really kinky one to begin with.
Like flip upside down, do a handstand, and then just all you gotta do is
stick it in.
Yeah, like like the joy of sex, which has got actually kind of bad writing, but it's really good.
Okay.
Basic. But I mean, just any sort of sex book to like give you like here's like a platform. Because even in that sense, like let's say you don't like something and you're like don't know how to bring it up, it's like it might be in the book and you're like, hey, you know, when they talk about using feet during sex, like we'd be like, I don't think that's something I'd ever want to try, versus me having to come to you, it's like, You know, I don't want to ever do anything with feet. You know, my verses coming out of the blue. It's like we're having a conversation around the book itself. And I give that to almost every couple that comes into my office as sort of an assignment. Like, and it's a thing they work on in the background as we're doing the other work. But just like having conversations around sex and having something to have the conversation around. And a sexuality book is a great, great way to do that.
I also really like... that's great advice. I might get that book, by the way.
I know, I'm probably gonna go get it.
The writing like is a little odd.
Okay.
But I also really
a cookbook.
Yeah.
Quick read.
I also really like, so I've noticed like if I get a back massage, I micromanage. Like, can you move over this way? Can you do this? Can you do this?
And I'm like, that would feel better.
Whenever I'm having sex and like I want my own pleasure, I do the same thing, I've noticed. So like I almost like think of it as like okay, if you're getting a back massage, you want it to be, you know, you want it to feel good. Why wouldn't you do the same thing during sex? And also when you're having sex, it's the perfect time, I feel like, to tell them, like, oh, can you go over here? Can you go over here? Because one, they're turned on. So like everything you say is hot. You know what I mean? So like, it's sexy to them. So like, tell them what you need in the moment too, because it's going to turn them on more and you'll get the pleasure that you want. I think
the border or the boundary is like, if that you want them to move over where they're rubbing or something, or how they're sitting or do this,
they're rubbing the left or wherever, labia, and you're like, that's not even it.
Listen, you got to scoot.
Scoot.
But the other part of that is like, they yank your hair or like they throw you in the bed a little too hard, like, and you can't be like, you can't, in the moment, you're probably not going to be like, don't do that. Cause then all of a sudden the zone is out and it's off. You know what I mean? So there's like a balance of like what you tell them and what you reflect on after, you know what I mean? I feel like I learned, whoa, like I'm mind blown at how much knowledge you have like that. I just have never learned. And I have, engaged in sex for, I don't know, many, many years, and I had no idea a bunch of this.
I can't even imagine what the listeners are going to come back. Like, oh, this is going to be an amazing episode.
I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface.
Well, and the same, I don't know everything either. So.
No, I know, but you know a lot.
Yeah.
One last question before we go into the straight candy moment.
Okay.
Do you find that heterosexual versus homosexual relationships have a different, like ebb and flow? Like, is there differences in the relationships of, like, who is desired or has a higher desire or different things like that?
Or just relationship issues? Yeah, is there just in general.
You know, it's the same. I mean, sometimes there's different issues that come into play around sexual pleasure and things like that, but not really. I mean, we're all dealing with the same issues. And interestingly enough, like, so in my practice, I have, probably about a third of the clients coming in are in same-sex relationships or some sort of dynamic like that. I also work with, like, polyamorous and open relationship dynamics, too. So I'm saying, like, sometimes I have, you know, more than one person in a relationship that comes in. So I think that, you know, what I find is that the issues are the same. And interestingly enough, you know, like when I was talking about that emotional and the physical, it's like I almost always, one person's the emotionally connective person and one person's the physically connective person. And I think, and I joke that like the other people have to exist, but they're not coming into my office. And maybe they don't come into my office because obviously then it's working for them, right? Like if we both get connection through the physical, it's working. If we both get connection through the emotional, it's working. And so I'm getting the people that where one person is one and one person's the other. But it's true in the same sex relationships as well.
This, we had another therapist on, our only other therapist, and she said the exact same thing.
Yeah, exact. Like,
actually,
to a T.
Renee.
You do?
Really?
We did our practicum site and internship together.
Oh, cool.
Same place.
Look at us just getting the
network.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, well, that.
I saw her on there. I was like, hey, I know her.
Yeah. I feel like that's good to know because I feel like people idealize, like, same sex. They probably understand the bodies more. They probably are touching each other and understand touch more and, you know, easier communication assumptions.
They have the same desire.
That's an assumption from a heterosexual person who is in a heterosexual relationship. You know what I mean? That's just
the only thing that I do notice maybe is a little bit different is when you have two women in a relationship, they're much more communicative and they're open and they're talking about what's happening or occurring. Maybe to a fault sometimes, but like, it's not significantly different. It's just that they might be more open about communicating what's going on. But that's about, you know, how women are socialized too. So, it could be biological. It's probably biological and social. It's both.
Yeah. A mix of the two. Yeah. Okay. We have a hashtag straight candy moment that someone wrote in and this was written in a few weeks ago, but it's directly correlating to like the sexual conversation and sexual desires and needs. So I'm going to read it to you guys. I don't think you've read this one either.
I'm excited.
Myself, female, 21 years old, and partner, male, 22 years old, have been together for a little over 6 months. He travels a lot for work and he helps manage a marketing business. This has never been a problem for us given our communication has been great from the get-go. He told me on the first date he travels for work. My friends would at times ask about our sex life and what it was like with us being apart too much. To which I responded, we're fine and leave it there and they don't really ask anymore. Sex between me and my partner is also great too. We're very open and communication flows before, during, and after sex. And he's not one for just communicating on himself and giving to himself. He's also a giver. A few months ago, my partner came back from a work trip and inevitably that night we slept together. Afterwards, the conversation of us being apart for weeks at a time came up and he said, I honestly don't know how you cope going this long without it, babe. I just don't know. I asked what
did he mean? He responds, going without sex and orgasms. I told them, well, yeah, like I go without sex, obviously, when he's away, but I have orgasms. He looked confused, so I told him that I masturbate when he's away. Immediately, he became angry. Please note that I've always been happy and confident in myself and my sexual desires and had been self-pleasing long before I had gotten with my partner. An argument arised after with him being angry, telling me I don't need to masturbate without him and whatnot. I explained the above, saying it's not a new thing. In the heat of the moment, I asked him whether he jacks off, and he's always to which he didn't initially respond to, then stumbled on his words saying it was a relevant question. So it sounds like he actually probably is. At that point, I was 99% sure masturbating when he was away too, which confused me because then they're both doing it and that's why he was so mad. I explained there was nothing wrong with sex and I do it because of his needs and my needs. Eventually, we dropped it, went to sleep. Okay. Anyway, long story short, she says that... My question is it okay to masturbate on your own in a relationship? I saw no problem with it and still see no problem with it, but the other party is self-pleasing and surely it's not an issue. Like, what is the problem here?
That was such a long-winded
I'm sorry.
For her
I know.
One question. She was like I explaining know. It all.
I know.
No,
sorry,
you.
I stumbled
it was
a little bit too because no. I was like, there's a few twos and I'm
we
like,
stumble, we stumble.
I'm a read. I'm not a good reader. Here we are.
Oh, gosh. I mean, working on it. I mean, we heard our reaction, but
no. There's nothing wrong with masturbating when you're in a relationship. Actually, what I tell couples when they come into my office is for sexuality to be good, you have to have a balance of both individual and couple sexuality. Now, not everybody is going to engage in masturbation in their individual sexuality, but you should be reading erotica novels. You should be doing something to sort of create sexual energy in yourself, separate from your partner. Oh, I got a hair in my mouth.
I hate that.
I noticed like your hair was why I had to move it mid episode.
Oh yeah, you shuffled her hair. You
like
tucked up behind her ear.
Because I realized the YouTube, you couldn't probably see her face. So,
you should be reading those. What's the book that Colleen Hoover books and like you know engaging
Colleen.
And engaging maybe like if you watch porn or like if you like just using a vibrator on your own or you know whatever having sexy time with yourself. But
whatever it is, and so should your partner, right? And again, like your own individual sexuality is sort of your own business. I mean, you can share that with your partner or not share that with your partner. Of course, your couple's sexuality is something that you talk about and you share together. Mm-hmm. I always, you know, say, I think a lot of times people will take that, like if somebody is looking at pornography, that is cheating. And I'll say not necessarily, and no, it's not. And I think it's figuring out like what the boundaries are within your relationship. Yeah. I say not necessarily because there's like lots of things online that can be sort of gray that you need to have conversation with your partner about. And I always try to encourage people to go to ethical porn sites. Like one of my favorite books for men is Ethical Porn for Dicks. It talks about how to have ethical porn use for men.
Oh, I love that.
And it's great for men to read, and it's great. It's Dr. Lay, L-E-Y.
Dr. Lay. That's great.
And that's his actual name.
I'm late to the party.
It's his actual last name, too.
That
so.
Is so funny.
But I think it's just, I think that, you know, pornography use can be done in an ethical way, and it's just being responsible with your use. Now, it can be problematic if, say, you're like, more interested in engaging in pornography use than sexual experiences with your partner, or if you have a constant issue with like where I did use pornography and then I can't get an erection. But again, I think it's about healthy individual sexuality. And so there's some complexity when I say that, because there can be people that use it in a way that's not healthy, and you do need to be able to be paying
Absolutely.
Attention to that.
Yeah.
But the majority of people use it in a healthy way. And the people do, and some partners will consider it cheating. I usually give them the book. Here's the Ethical Porn for Dicks book. Why don't you read this and talk about this?
I'm just imagining you handing the book. Here you go.
This brings up a really good question and a conversation that I had my boyfriend with the other day, and I want your take. And it's just interesting.
I like sit back. I'm like, okay.
So we were talking about, cause I was like, oh yeah, I masturbated today. And he was like, oh, did you? I'm like, yep. And he was like, so do you like watch porn or anything? I'm like, no, I just like masturbate because it feels good. Like I don't even really have to feel horny when I masturbate. And he was like, what do you mean? Then how do you masturbate when you're not horny? I was like it just helps with my anxiety and stuff too. Like, I don't know. And I was like, so do you have to, like, you can't just lay down and masturbate? And he was like, no, like I need like something like porn or, you know, like you there or something to like stimulate me. And I'm like, is it true that like girls can just like, why do we masturbate when we're not always horny, but like guys can only masturbate when they're turned on by something?
So So men and women are just different around sexuality. Yeah. So if you go to more like the base biological reasons around sexuality for men and women, like men's job is to sort of go out there and reproduce as much as they possibly can, right? I mean, again, I'm talking, we're human, we don't necessarily behave this way, but that's, and women's job is to sort of have babies and take care of them, right? If you take it to the biological level of what the purpose of sexuality is. And so men tend to be more attracted to images and need sort of different images to sort of spark that. Where women are going to be more often than not, again, there's going to be exceptions to this, but women more often than not are going to want erotic novels or fantasies in their head or things that they're doing sort of on their own. But they use
a good book where it's a sex scene. Like, yeah. I never get horny. Like, porn, sure, whatever. I'm like, okay. But if it is a detailed book, I'm like, oh my God.
It ends with
God.
Us. I was reading it next to Jordan, and I'm like,
we have to have
sex. I like
kind of
looked at him to see if he was looking at me, and then I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so horny. I can't even think. Okay, I'm going to read the page and then I'm going to, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, women want the story. They want some sort of story before the encounter sort of happens or occurs, where men are just going to watch the images. I think one thing to keep in mind, too, is like a lot of women are fearful that men are comparing them to the images they're watching online. They're
guilty.
They're not. They're not comparing you. I mean, sure, a few might be. There's always exceptions
to the
rule.
There's always the bad apples.
There's always the bad apples, but the majority of men are not watching those images and comparing their partner to those images.
They're not thinking like, oh, she's got a bigger butters, bigger boobs than the girl that I'm actually physically with.
They're just doing it because they want to be turned on.
They want a different new image to look at. I mean, maybe Ben could let us know if that. I mean, he's the man here.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, yeah, wait.
Let us know.
No, very much. Like the last girl I was like sexting with, she told me she was like, I go back and like read the messages that I sent to her
when she's masturbating.
Yeah, and I was like, "Whoa, like that's crazy. I would never do that." Like
go watch porn.
Yeah. And that was pretty, I don't know, like you said, the erotic novels, like it this is all just like following the track of
probably
like
why
myself.
Girls like sexting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow.
Oh my God. I just feel like everything's coming full circle and I feel like we scratched the surface. I feel like I have so many more questions, but you're amazing and your knowledge is so vast. And I feel like people are going to be bugging you probably from our listeners. Can you give them like information on where to find you? Like maybe your Instagram handle?
Yeah, my Instagram handle is Lindsay Fraser LMFT. And then you can also find me on my website, which is lindsayfraser.com. And then I also do have a Facebook business page, but I'm actually not on that as frequently, but it is out there. It's just Lindsay Fraser LMFT CST.
Lindsay's with a Y, everybody, just in case you go check it in.
It is Lindsay with a Y. It's LYNDSEY. And Fraser is FRASER. There's multiple ways to spell those both.
Yeah, yes. But hey, they'll find you. Trust me, they'll keep searching.
It's so funny when I'm hearing you talk. I'm like, I've been like watching the Outlander series and reading the books. I was like, like my last name, like Jamie Fraser. My name is Lindsay Fraser.
Oh my God, work it. I love it.
Also, today I was on the phone with the doctor, and they're like, "Are you Kay?" I'm like, "What? No." And they're like, "Oh no, Kay." And I'm like, "Oh, Sydney is my first name. My last name is Kay." And they're like, "Oh, that's weird." I'm like, have your opinion elsewhere."
Yes, I'm okay.
Yeah, I'm okay. Like, huh? No, I was confused. Yeah. Thank you for being here. That was extremely helpful. Like, I truly I feel better.
Yeah.
Like I'm sitting here and I feel more sexually confident.
Yeah.
I feel like
same.
I'm okay with where I'm at. I don't know. I feel good.
I feel like we all feel really good.
I know, look at cheese over there.
I am so excited for the listeners to listen to this.
Me too. If you've hung out all the way to here, please go rate us on Apple Podcasts. Please, we love you so much. Do it, please, will you? At Candid Sid is my handle.
At Candid Sof.
And at Ben Sarbacher.
Lindsay, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Rocked it.
Appreciate it.
Awesome. Join our wait list, people. Get on it.
Get on.
We love you and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Same thing here. Same feeling. They're going to love this.
Thank you so much. That was amazing. I'm going to give you a hug.